There will be days when you wake up with a feeling of dread. A feeling that the fight you've been fighting is not worth continuing. I know this feeling. You feel alone, isolated and tired. An ember trying to stay lit, propagating signal in an ocean of influencers who use open mouth thumbnails on YouTube. The forces of PodConf are daunting. They all repeat the same narratives and will turn on you in a moment if you do not comply with their endless purity tests. But random acts of non-compliance are occurring constantly. There are whole armies of disaffected individuals that are choosing to use their brains. You may not know they exist, but they are out there. They are waking up. Even the smallest act of non-compliance undermines those who seek to control. Every non-KYC cigarette transaction. Every value-for-value lightning transaction. Every decision to do what's in your own best interest pushes the needle. Remember this. The need to dominate and control others is desperate and is unnatural. Keeping people brainwashed takes constant effort. It eventually breaks and falls apart because their status is brittle. Oppression of the human mind is not an act of strength, but a weakness and insecurity. Remember and know this. You may have felt like you've been screaming into the void, posting the dankest memes only to have big accounts steal them and get massive engagement. You may not be getting the recognition you deserve, but the revolution isn't about engagement. It is about being unique, being original, being the individual that seeks to provide value instead of siphoning it away from others. The revolution is about having self-respect. Spark up a cigarette, let your fire burn. Their control is crumbling. Only you own your mind. Stand tall, because your time has come. I will see you on the Intellectual Silk Road.
Welcome back to Bugle Weekly. Summertime, as many of you may know, Friday, May 16th, Moody's credit agency downgraded United States credit rating from AAA to AA1, marking the third and final domino to fall in the three horsemen of the credit agencies. The first one, of course, S&P downgraded the United States from AAA to AA+ in 2011. And then Fitch downgraded the United States credit rating in August of 2023. They also lowered it from AA+ from AAA. Yeah, so Friday was Moody's. And the reason that, you know, the other credit agencies, they cited the rising debt, unsustainable fiscal policy, but Moody's cited something different. Moody's cited "Nothing Stops This Train" by Lynn Alden in her thesis for the fact that, you know, nothing stops this liquidity train, something that she has made famous. And this is why the Trump administration, the White House, is now scrambling to ban the credit agencies from listening to Lynn Alden podcasts or following her tweets. Richard, this is a big moment in USDT and the dollar's, fall from the reserve currency to realizing that Bitcoin has already won. How are you thinking about what this means to the economy?
This is a huge moment. I know the Trump administration is pretty upset about this. They're taking it a little bit personally. Trump considers himself an expert when dealing with debt. That's how he's become very successful, is he's leveraged debt. He knows how to leverage debt. And so I think he's kind of taken it to an affront. And I've been hearing murmurs that he is considering banning these credit agencies, essentially pulling all the federal funding for them if they listen to Lynn Alden interviews. Interesting enough, the Bitcoin conference decided for the first time ever to give Lynn, this is actually kind of astounding that she didn't have this opportunity before, but for the first time ever, she's getting a keynote speech on the main stage. I think they relegated her to panel positions prior to this.
Yeah, they force her to. They force her to share the stage with Shinobi, and she has finally gotten the main stage.
Which, you know, Maggie did a very interesting article last week about Bitcoin Magazine's quote unquote women problem. There's a deep dive looking at the fall in percentage of women speakers. And I'd like to take credit for the reason that Lynn is speaking in a keynote stage. I think us at the Bugle, we have pointed out to the world the objective reality that Lynn Alden is hot. Her brand, her relevancy is only continuing to grow as people are coming to this realization that she is peak standard for women beauty standards. And I think the meme overpowered Bitcoin Magazine's alleged anti-women speaker policy.
Yeah, this is huge. And like I said, we do want to take credit, but we don't want to take credit away from Lynn Alden. Lynn Alden has earned this, or, you know, earned this speech, earned this privilege. She's putting the proof of work. And yeah, it's but we do want to just kind of say, like, you know, it's been great to achieve this together, Lynn Alden and the Bugle. I think this is a really big win for both of us. Probably a bigger win for the Bugle, but it's, you know, it's relative speaking. So that's huge. And but the Trump administration is earning some pushback and taking some criticism for the word got out that they have subpoenaed the X platform owned by Elon Musk, and they wanted to have data on anyone who might be working at the credit agencies, might not be a U.S. citizen, who is liking Nothing Stops This Train videos and Nothing Stops This Train tweets on Twitter, on YouTube. And they wanted to target and intimidate, potentially send ICE with some Solana token snitches, or at least remove federal funding from these credit. If the federal government's going to pay a credit agency to rate them, they should get AAA ratings. If they're paying for a service and that ratings agency is letting their employees listen to Lynn Alden say that Nothing Stops This Train and get in the way of doing their job, of giving the U.S. a AAA rating, they shouldn't get federal funding for that. And I think it is fair to withhold that.
Totally. Yeah, you don't bite the hand that feeds you. And I just want to clarify, when I say the Bugle takes credit for it, we didn't lift Lynn above where she was. All we did is we just objectively reported the news on her when many other platforms weren't. There are very few platforms right. that were brave enough to stand up in a sea of orange cells that are angry and they're jealous that a woman's smarter than them and say Lynn Alden is hot. But we did. We were the only news agency that was willing to report that objective reality. And this is a growing trend I see over and over again, you know, where Podcoff controls these narratives. People are afraid to stand up and just state the obvious. They're afraid to state the obvious. They're too set on repeating what everybody else is talking about. They're too afraid of rocking the boat. They're too afraid of losing their sponsors. And this is the importance of credentials. This is the importance of integrity. This is the importance of journalists that smoke cigarettes. If you want to see a bright future where Lynn Alden has... It's bigger than Lynn Alden. But yeah, anyways, it is very interesting. So the Trump administration's upset. They are... I'm curious to see. I don't think they're going to subpoena Orange Label to see who bought a Lynn Alden's hot t-shirt. But if you want to buy a Lynn Alden's hot t-shirt, It's probably not a good idea if you work for Moody's, but yeah, go over to ownerslabel.co. Yeah. Those are pretty cool.
Don't wear Lynn Alden is hot t-shirt to the Fitch, you know, summer cookout on 4th of July where everybody brings your family. They have some corporate U.S. government sponsored fireworks. I wouldn't wear it there, but I guess the real question, and I'm curious what you think, is they're trying to ban that content in the creator agencies, but is it too late? I mean, but nothing stops this train meme. It's spread throughout the culture. There's no way of getting around it anymore. It's you would have to actively pretend. You'd have to lie at work and say you didn't, you know, you didn't hear it.
It's Lindy. Lynn Alden is hot as Lindy. It's going mainstream, folks.
But what about Nothing Stops This Train? Because that's what the real battle is over, is Nothing Stops This Train meme.
Well, I kind of see them.
Is it too late?
I see them as one and the same, you know, because when somebody says Lynn Alden's hot, they're essentially saying Nothing Stops This Train. When somebody says Nothing right. Stops This Train, they're essentially saying Lynn Alden is hot.
That's true. So it is censorship resistant signal about the future of the debt, you know, the credit, U.S. credit status. And if Nothing Stops This Train, that means that, you know, this credit status could go from gradually to suddenly and then retarded. Like it can happen any moment. And this is going to lead to a lot of volatility. We're already seeing a lot of volatility in markets. We're seeing a lot of volatility in the culture. And another rupture, another, you know, manifestation of that has popped up again this week in the Sats versus Bits debate. It was like Jack Dorsey is leading the charge to change Sats to Bits. And they think that, well, what do you think they think? Because I have my opinion and I have my rant about this, but you have a more practical, technical explanation for this. So, well, you know, what's your take on this debate?
I think anytime that you're trying to change Bitcoin from the premise that people are too retarded to understand it, it's a stupid argument, because the expectation shouldn't be to water things down for what retarded people. The expectation should be for them to not be retarded at the end of the day. And so the argument around changing Sats to Bits is that these boomers that don't know how to use their iPhones, like when BPI is going to talk to, when they're going to Comet Ping Pong to talk to these politicians and orange pill them, they don't get it because it's Sats instead of Bits. And Dorsey, you know, having spent a lot of time at Comet Ping Pong, you know, he has this understanding. And so he's trying to change the language. But the problem is, you know, many of us have been orange pilling boomers for a while, and we've gotten these boomers to understand Sats. We don't want to re-explain.
It wasn't easy. This wasn't easy. It's not like it just came naturally. We had to explain that Sats meant Satoshis, and it was, you know, 100 million to 1. So it's a little bit more difficult to keep up with. It's not just as natural. It took a lot of work, a lot of free Sats from, hey, check out this new Lightning wallet that I heard about on a Bitcoin podcast. Oh, here you go. You can send me Sats. It took a lot of us, and we just got over winning that battle. And now we have to go and tell them that this has changed again. They don't like change. They want a more, they don't want so much volatility in the nomenclature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we had to, like, boomers, they don't understand numbers this big. They don't understand, like, 100 million is hard for them to wrap their mind around. This is why the national debt doesn't seem problematic to them, because it's just such an enormous number that it just doesn't even register in their brain. Once you start talking about trillions, they can't, because they were buying candy bars when they were kids for like 10 cents. You know what I mean? They think it's small numbers. They think smally. They have small brains. Their brains didn't develop as a result of looking at dank memes on the internet growing up.
Yeah, but in their water, they had fluoride in their water. They had very little entropy in their digital, like television, radio. It was very, very much an echo chamber. It was very much limited option for perspective. It was not the abundance culture which we have today. Big data, AI, all this compute, all this data, all these large language models, all these big numbers. We are thinking about those every day. We're thinking, that's why we're excelling in this environment, boomers or not. Boomers need the most simple possible memes, and they need consistency, and they need to depend on, like, if they're going to spend their scarce mental resources to learn a new facet of the protocol, that it's not going to change, that they're going to be able to depend on that. And the thing about my take on it is, this is, especially when you listen to the justification of why they want to make these changes. They talk about unit bias. They talk about just a more, it's easier for the normie to grok. It sounds more, they're trying to take shortcuts in how they orange build people. They think that if they change from sats to bits, that people will just get it when they try to orange build them. They won't have to listen to 40 hours per week of Bitcoin podcasts. But unfortunately, I mean, they keep trying to change this, and they do. They have layers. They have IBIT. They have FBTC, GBTC, NSTR, all of these tickers that try to simplify it for a boomer or an institution or a nation state. It's like, here, you buy this ETF, IBIT, instead of buy SACs. And what we learn time and time again is none of those replace or are a good substitute for 40 hours per week. You don't get more adoption without more Bitcoin podcasts or Bitcoin podcasters and more hours of Bitcoin podcasts listened to. You cannot simplify this protocol and user experience anymore, or at least at the speed that you need for global adoption, because the people who are able to be persuaded by this, they've already been onboarded. They've been onboarded despite the user experience. So you're just trying to take shortcuts. And what you're not thinking about is the downstream trade-offs. It's like Taproot. We didn't think about the consequences. Changing sats to bits is not going to be a net positive, but it could actually be a net negative, and it might lose our boomer parents.
Well, it's a tactical error, because the strategy shouldn't be to orange pill the boomers. It should be to orange pill their kids. So when you think of the average boomer, they get the new iPhone, they don't know how to use it. What do? They ask their kid or the grandkid how to teach it, them how to use it, right? It's the same thing with Bitcoin. You have to teach the kid, their kids and their grandkids how to teach them, or at least do it for them. It's happening whether, like, Bitcoin's already won. They're going to get orange pilled. They're not going to have a choice. You don't have to tailor the experience for them, just because, like, I mean, you look at Gen X. So, like, Gen X is the generation, they're kind of retarded too, but they're significantly less retarded than the boomers. And the reason why is they actually know how to use their iPhones. And so if they have a question, they're fully capable of going and asking ChatGPT. And we saw this where, you know, the boomers, they were getting displaced by the younger generations and jobs, because people didn't want to hire them because they didn't know how to use their computers. And that's the big difference, is whether you know how to use Google and ChatGPT.
Right. It's about culture. If you know anything about Gen X, they all just love the same band, Tool, with Maynard James Keenan. And Tool is essentially a rock band that was about, like, math equations and geometry and cryptography and, like, all those, like, little squiggly symbols on, like, the computer, like the calculators you had in high school or in college. Is like, that was like, it helped them think about things in an abstract sense with bigger numbers. And that's why they're able to grok sats. It's why they're able to think about, we have to solve this problem with national debt. It's why people like fundamentals are so good with risk and math equations, doing math homework. It's because their favorite band growing up was Tool. And the millennials, we grew up with social media. We grew up with all this. It's the way to onboard. I don't care what you, like you said, it's going to happen whether people like it or not. I think my point is that for people to really get it, as long as to listen 40 hours per week, it's not about changing the unit of account, just so it makes sense more naturally when you see it on the screen.
If anybody could speak to this issue, it's me, because I don't know how to use my computer or iPhone either. But I have a wife that does. I'm resourceful enough to have figured out a workaround for, like, I still do everything on a typewriter, and I write things on paper with a pencil, and I know how to write cursive. The boomers should be able to figure this out. They just outsource those skill sets to people that know how to do that. They have kids and grandkids, or they should. Like, it's as simple as that. I don't think we have to move the needle or move the goalpost just because boomers are retarded. I think this is a really stupid idea by Jack Dorsey. And Jack Dorsey hates journalism. He hates free speech. Why would you even consider his opinion? There's all these people out there trying to get people, like, going after Trace Mayer, like Mr. Hoddle. Mr. Hoddle's going after Trace Mayer, talking about Mimblewimble coin. He wants him to go and, you know, pay his penance for being a shitcoiner in the past. People do this to Max Kaiser all the time. I'm pretty sure almost everybody shitcoined at some point. Dorsey has done something significantly worse than shitcoin. He did something significantly worse than shitcoining, and by attacking the institution of journalism, he essentially gave the CIA a free right to control speech for a period of years on the most important speech platform in Twitter, and which is the platform of the journalist at the end of the day. That's what Twitter is. And he hasn't answered for it. So why should we listen to him on this debate around sats versus bits, where he wants us to make things easier on the boomers?
Right. Yeah. Not only has he not apologized or not answered for it, he hasn't gone Bitcoin podcast to Bitcoin podcast to explain himself to the community, to the industry. And I don't know if you, there's a lot of people who, depending on when you came through and got orange pilled, that were very impacted and influenced in a positive way by Trace Mayer, you know, from like 2013 to 2018 or so. A lot of people, he orange pilled a lot of people. He had a very, his Mayer multiple. I mean, it was one of the most simple little meme calculations, like, you know, like power law or stock to flow, about when it was, you know, a macro gentleman's signal that it was time to buy the dip. This Mimblewimble thing comes up, and now everybody who used to talk about him so, you know, positively, and it totally rejects him because PodConf, people who fund PodConf do not approve. People like Jack Dorsey, but Jack Dorsey never orange billed anybody. All he does is come in and use his money to impact his influence without giving anything back, or without even explaining why he's here.
Yeah, he has some answering to do. He needs to go on an apology tour, to say the least.
Well, you know, to take the devil's advocate side, there are people who believe that Jack Dorsey was open to going on Bitcoin podcasts and being open to the community, but he was in Costa Rica, and a Bitcoin podcaster asked him for an interview, and it ended up being Tatum, and it was between two ASICs. And he thought that was what all Bitcoin podcasts were like. It kind of scared him away. Tatum basically ruined Jack Dorsey for all other Bitcoin podcasters going forward. So there is that side of the debate, but I don't know if you have a comment on that.
That's an interesting theory. I like that. Yeah. Dorsey goes on a podcast, talks to Tatum's one of the most autistic interviewers I've ever seen.
He's wearing a bulletproof vest, and he's in khakis. He's got a mustache. He's kind of an orange cell at the time. And that's the first experience that Dorsey has.
It's a bad precedent. I think one of the things that Dorsey, you know, feels obligated to do is to bring a lawyer on every podcast with him. I don't know if you've noticed that, but he did that when he went on Rogan. And it kind of gets expensive and kind of tedious having to deal with a lawyer on a podcast. I don't think Bitcoin
is. Do we know if that lawyer was Jewish?
No, she was Indian.
So that one will throw you off. I think a lot of times you might be expecting a Jewish lawyer and you might think you know how to handle them. And then you get an Indian lawyer. They kind of throws you off.
I think it would have been a better interview if he had a Jewish lawyer instead of an Indian one. But yeah, it's kind of tedious. I don't think Bitcoiners are really excited about that. You know what I mean? Like
Jack Dorsey's not. He is friends with some really important Bitcoin. And isn't he close with Dr. Jack Cruz?
That's what John Seth said.
Yeah. He called who sensei. I don't remember which person. Did Jack call Dr. Cruz sensei?
I bet you it's like a mutual thing. They call each other sensei. They know they're on the same level as each other.
Interesting. Well, you know, it is where it is. We're not going to change. You know, Elon Musk has changed Twitter to X, but we still say Twitter, still say tweet. So, you know, it's at the end of the day, it's not illegal yet to use, you know, sats instead of bits. But we'll have to keep an eye on that. I'm of the opinion it's not a big deal.
It's a big deal. I think this is a bigger deal than the op return debate, personally.
This one's easier to influence, win with influencers.
This is what communists do. They like to change language. They're always trying to redefine terms. Language matters. This is not a trivial matter. Sats are sats. This is a hill to die on. Fuck Jack Dorsey.
Language is rooted in tradition and ancestors and culture. If you can sever that tie, you can redefine how people think about very fundamental values in their life. How they think about family, how they think about mothers, how they think about fathers, how they think about the government, how they think about laws, how they think about their rights and how they understand what rights are.
It just completely invalidates age-old memes. So, you know, what is Matt O'Dell going to do? Is he going to go out on Oster and post "Stay humble, stack bits"? That just doesn't. It doesn't ring.
Do you want Silicon Valley Hollywood venture capitalists telling you that you can't say TikTok next block anymore? Or that you can't talk about banks being closed on the weekend. Bitcoin doesn't ever close. Just because somebody thinks that a meme is stale or it's, you know, past its time to retire it, who are they to judge? Sometimes it's funny to bring back an old meme when people least expect it. And it's exactly what people need to, you know, jar some sense into their head, but they don't want that. And yeah, you're right.
Like, what's he going to do next? After he changes, it's a slippery slope. If you let Dorsey start changing the language on things, what's he going to do? Change blocks to squares? The dude still hasn't integrated Bitcoin into anything. He claims to be
a Bitcoiner. What happened last time? What happened last time we let him police language?
Yeah. He's a bad track record on policing language, for sure. That's a great point. Should not... His opinion is invalid in the matter. Stake and Shake integrated Bitcoin. And we don't even know, like, who at Stake and Shake's a Bitcoiner that's been very public about it. That's been, you know, funding core devs and wearing Satoshi shirts, hanging out with Jay-Z at the Super Bowl. The dude hasn't done it. Sure, you can buy Bitcoin and Cash App, but, like, that puts you on the same level as Swan, meaning that you have created no innovation whatsoever.
You do have not earned your authority in the industry or in the culture. Whether somebody like Jack has pushing of it. I think this is the right way forward. I think it's the best for Bitcoin. I think this is the it's good for the network. You don't have the authority to moralize or be self-righteous about your contributions, because those your contributions and their consequences speak for themselves. But you should also speak for yourself. And it doesn't seem like he's speaking for himself. It does sound like he's speaking with some, objective or some sort of idea, but it doesn't seem like he's speaking for himself on why it's important to him, for why he's trying to explain why he's doing it the way he's doing it. Then I just think that if you're going to take money from Jack Dorsey, or if you're going to work with Jack Dorsey, or you're just going to appease Jack Dorsey, I would just say, why should he have no? Why does he put up to the purity test? Why does everybody else have the purity test?
We need to submit him to purity test. I think we held his feet to the fire. There's a few people holding his feet to the fire, and I think we should. The communists are going to use Bitcoin. That's fine. I don't have any issue with the communists using Bitcoin. I encourage them to. It's going to fix them. It's going to fix their communism eventually on a long enough time horizon. It'll fix them. It's a good thing for communists to use Bitcoin. But one thing we cannot allow for is the communists to dictate anything around language when it comes to Bitcoin.
Yeah, we do not want to ever give the communists control of the memes. The memes should be decentralized. And, that should be a big component of what Bitcoin podcasts are doing, is making sure the memes are free-flowing.
Can communists even meme? Have you ever seen a good communist memer?
I was expecting to be able to think of something, but no, I can't. Is not being good at memes an indication that you're a communist? Or is it, should you be worried if nobody likes your memes that you might be a communist?
I think so. You might just be a bad memer. I think, maybe it is. It's just because communism isn't rooted in truth at the end of the day. And like, what makes a good meme is that you have truth behind it. It resonates with people. But when you're living in make-believe land, thinking that you should rename SaaS to bits, of course your memes are going to suck. Because it's so nonsensical.
Yeah, yeah. If you think you're telling the truth and nobody calls you retarded, then you might not be malicious. You might just, that might be a reality check that you don't, what your idea of truth is might be wrong. You might be bamboozled.
100%.
Speaking of which, the past week has been, a lot of stress, a lot of trauma, a lot of emotions, none other than, no more, excuse me, on than Shinobi. Shinobi is crashing out on the timeline. He has been engaged in some really harsh debates with Adam Cimeca, with Justin Bechler, with the other people in like Mechanic and the people who support that on that camp. And it's just too much. Shinobi's crashed out. He needs a vacation. He is trying to be the influencer. Personal influencer of all of the core maintainers or for Bitcoin Core. He's trying to defend Gloria from harassment from people who, were being mean to a female core dev and making her delete her Twitter. He's defending everybody, as is too many people to defend. Whereas Luke he's got Ocean. He's got Mechanic. He's got more than Mechanic. I mean, he's got Justin Bechler. He's got Telmer. He's got Canute. He's got Daniel Prince. He's got, he's got Fractal Encrypt. Shinobi's working for multiple people, and Shinobi is important. I mean, Shinobi is burnt out. He has responsibilities to Bitcoin Magazine. He has to write, one op-ed per month. And he's not even, his op-eds have been wishy-washy lately. He's too busy. He's too spread out. and he's got to go to another conference again, and it's very difficult. He needs a rest. Somebody's got to step up.
I agree.
How do you think that works out? How do you think we fix this problem? How do we have to, can the market organically find a solution here, or where do they start?
Well, I think, yeah, absolutely. The market organically finds a solution. I think the market's going to come to the realization at some point that they're incentivized to fund influencers to represent the different core devs. So every core dev will have a slew of influencers. So Luke has Mechanic and all these other podcasters representing him. Mechanic's kind of like the ringleader of the influencer circle. So he's like the chief capo for Luke and for Knots. And every other core dev essentially needs their own capo influencer to represent what they're saying. You know, Gloria tried to do it herself. She tried to explain herself on Twitter. She got absolutely decimated by Mechanic's underlings. And she realized she wasn't a memer. She wasn't an influencer at the end of the day. She was a dev, so she deleted her Twitter. It was a bad tactical mistake on her part. You need to let the influencers do their job, and the core devs need to do their job. You just stay in your lane. But
maybe
something I proposed with Heavily Armed Clown on the interview that we did last week with him, which was really great. Check it out. He wasn't a big fan of the idea, but I think in this day and age, it's important where we live in this influencer marketplace. You just have to embrace it and accept it. If your idea, if you don't embrace the influencers, then you're going to have a minority opinion at the end of the day.
Is part of the problem, do you think, that maybe the core devs, they're asked to do a lot of things. They just don't know what their job really is. And they don't have anybody holding them accountable for doing the job that they are there as core devs to do. Do you think that there's some mission creep where they think they have to do live streams and podcasts and be influencers and be hot and be current and listen to pod? Like, maybe they need some better regulatory clarity on their role and their jobs, and maybe that's part of it. And the influencers coming in would help them do that. They would help them focus on code. Cypherpunks write code. They don't have time to be on arguing on spaces and being influencers, and this would really relieve that burden for them.
Yeah. I think they're coming to the realization 100%. They're coming around to this idea. A lot of people have to learn the hard way.
Maybe some of them wouldn't even want to be core devs if they couldn't be influencers. Maybe they would move on to other things. Maybe they'd just stick to full-time influence.
Live streaming and podcasting is hard work.
Right.
This is like one of the things that's hard. You know, you think if you're typical developer, they're going to be very autistic at the end of the day. People that just sit in a code editor, they're going to be very, very autistic. People that understand, like, you don't, as like a non-autistic or lower end of the spectrum, I think we all embody a little bit of autism, especially if you've gotten into Bitcoin religiously at this point. You're going to have a little bit of autism in you, but there's a different type of autism of someone that understands C++. Versus somebody that understands how to podcast. And
right.
To be a podcaster, you have to be a communicator. And it's hard to do if you're super autistic.
And fundamentally, it boils down to the fact that there's only so many problems you can solve per day. There's only so many problems you can solve per block. And when you treat coding is fundamentally about solving problems with code. You're trying to solve software problems. You're trying to patch. You're trying to debug. You're trying to figure out why something's not working on testnet. You're trying to figure out why the user experience for your cloud provider is shaky. There's a lot of user experience problems to solve. encoding as well. And then you start a podcast, and maybe people just have this idea. And some people do, they think podcasting is easy. It's just people talking. They don't realize that it's a fundamental matter of problem solving. You're solving UX problems with your podcast equipment. You're solving UX problems with Fountain. You're solving UX problems with trying to market it on Noster and X. You're solving UX problems of trying to get it cut together and published. You're solving UX problems for how to, you know, discuss why Bitcoin fixes this problem. So you have to be able to articulate it. There's only so many problems you can solve there. You don't have enough time to be an influencer and a core dev, and people take for granted the amount of work one side has to put into it. And they overestimate their abilities, and it's fine. That's fine. The Shinobi is a great example. Shinobi cannot go on one or two spaces a week and argue with Justin Bechtler and write an op-ed per month for Bitcoin Magazine. And, you know, go to another Bitcoin BitDevs meetup and, you know, talk about the same things in like the debate about op return. It's too much work. People need to step up to the plate and kind of be that spokesperson for these brilliant autistic devs.
Yeah. You can see Shinobi's worn out. He hasn't gotten enough time to watch anime. It's beating him up.
He's relying too much on whiskey to get through spaces. You know, it's tough out there right now. But there's a lot of people on the other side who too many people are trying to be the same spokesman for Luke. And I think that, they really only have one core dev on their side. So everybody has to be the spokesman for him. It's going to be hard to beat that, honestly.
Yeah, it totally will.
It does hurt Luke's bat now. They have to stop using pictures of skinny Luke, needle neck Mook. When you see somebody, you're like, oh, wow, this guy, he's going to hack through any server. And so you show fat Luke, and it just kind of loses his mystique.
Definitely does. Well, I think we should talk about Vegas a little bit. And before we roll into that, I think we should provide the context for what I'm about to talk about. So Adam Semeca had a big week this past week. He blew up. He's officially... I would say he's the official Bitcoin spokesperson for Stake and Shake now, in a way.
Yeah, Stake and Shake's success with this Bitcoin experiment, particularly as it pertains to the public communications, the public relations about it, as well as a lot of the franchise owners of Stake and Shake locations in several Midwest markets. It kind of hinges on Adam Semeca's support. Is he going to signal support to the meetups in that area that they should take their family to get some tallow fries, you know, or a tallow shake with some sats? He's going to hold a lot of those Stake and Shake franchise owners accountable to, you know, when you get those lighting sats for that, you know, that burger, you got to keep that in Bitcoin. Don't convert that to dollars immediately. Like, you have to show that you're serious in this community, and you're going to have Bitcoin treasuries in our zip codes. But we're excited to collaborate with Adam. Where were you? What news did you have?
Well, before I go into the news, I did want to. So he came up with a brilliant marketing strategy for Stake and Shake. So one of the best ways to market to Bitcoiners is to issue a new purity test. And so he came up with a new purity test, which was, if you don't eat at Stake and Shake and purchase your meal with Bitcoin, then you want CBDCs. And I thought that was pretty brilliant. That was a strike of genius on his part coming up with that. Here at the Bugle, we don't really want CBDCs. It's not... Or at least for me, I won't speak for everybody, but I think that's kind of a general feeling amongst the in the newsroom. I don't want CBDCs, so I want to go eat at Stake and Shake with Adam Semeca in Vegas, because there is actually a Stake and Shake on Fremont Street right down the street from where we're going to be doing Satirize the System. I think it's like a 5-minute walk or so. And about the time that it takes to smoke 3 cigarettes, you can walk to Steak and Shake and pay for a meal in Bitcoin. So I was talking with Adam Semeca. It's looking like it's pretty likely that we're going to have a sit down with Adam Semeca eating Steak and Shake.
Yeah, so that's exciting. We're going to eat at Steak and Shake. We're going to buy it with Bitcoin. And what's another, something that not a lot of people may remember, but there's an In-N-Out burger as well in Vegas. And when people go to Vegas, they want to go to In-N-Out because it's, you know, usually you can only get it in places like California and a few other states, but they come into Vegas like, all right, we can get In-N-Out. But In-N-Out talked about accepting Bitcoin a few months ago. And it ultimately chose the CBDC. They decided they wanted to accept the CBDC. So it's not just about supporting, you know, Steak and Shake, you know, in this movement, but it's also about sending a message that we prefer Bitcoin over the CBDC by not eating it in and out and eating it Steak and Shake instead.
Definitely. I mean, this is very like common understanding I think most people have at this point is this idea of voting with your wallet. What you're essentially doing when you're eating a Steak and Shake, and this is what Adam has very astutely pointed out to everybody, is you're engaging in democracy. You're voting with your wallet. And it's a beautiful way to engage in democracy. And yeah, I mean, In-N-Out, what a bunch of losers choosing the CBDC instead.
Voting with your wallet, you know, it used to be a metaphor, but now it's literal. You're using your Lightning wallet. It's not just thinking about the dollars in your pocket. It's voting by using Lightning.
And what's great about it, too, when you're looking at it, I haven't gotten the chance to go to Steak and Shake yet. I don't even know where the nearest one is where I live. But the great thing is that I've been seeing on all of the receipts that everybody's posted on Twitter is they're pricing in sats. They're not pricing in bits.
Probably, yeah.
So what are you going to do, Jack Dorsey? Are you going to make Steak and Shake just completely change their pricing structure?
Yeah,
after they figured out, before you figured out how to integrate Bitcoin into their business?
They figured, yeah, they integrated all their point of sale systems. You don't even have a point of sale system. You should have to, that accepts Bitcoin anyway. You should have to adopt, you know, lean on tradition. If you knew what the tradition was, if you knew what the precedent was, if you cared, you wouldn't be going this route.
I mean, what a missed opportunity. Because they're accepting Bitcoin in their point of sale, it's obvious that they're not using Square. Jack Dorsey could have facilitated the first giant fast food chain onboarding into Bitcoin, and he chose not to. Because he's too focused on trying to convince people to change language. Where are these people's priorities, Rod? I just don't get it. It's mind-boggling.
If you were listening to enough Bitcoin podcast, you would know what the vibes were. You would know what the trends in the, you just have your finger on the pulse, your ear to the ground, and you would know which way the market was going. You would know which way the revenue was flowing, the technology was flowing, and you wouldn't make so many boneheaded, or you wouldn't try so many boneheaded ideas. At the end of the day, this costs a lot of money and energy and resources to try to change these elements of Bitcoin. It's really difficult to do. You'd think if they really actually care about the future of the network, they would be more of a benevolent actor, at least, or a good faith actor, instead of at least seeming like always being bad actors.
So you mentioned the word vibe, which triggered something in my brain. So Vibe Capital's been rolling. Very excited at the developments over there. They're creating one of the most talented teams that I've ever seen put together. I would say they're taking this whole like Bitcoin treasury meme thing to next level. They're assembling some of the best memers out there. in their executive suite.
Yeah, they're stacking. Their ultimate goal is to stack sats, but right now they're laying the groundwork, and they are stacking credentials, and they are stacking memers and meme talent. And it is, honestly, I haven't seen such an effective organization of influencers and podcasters since Swan came on the scene in 2020. It is, you know, this can be much bigger. This is happening much faster.
So I think there's two questions I have. Is Swan going to try and co-opt it? Which would be disappointing to me. Just because
they'll try. I think they try to co-opt everything. You know, creatine was the most recent example.
Okay. So that's your thought on that. Now, the other question I had is, why doesn't Pledator like it? What's his issue here?
Yeah, Pledator has been the Vibes police so far. I think they'd only been tweeting and gaining new followers for about less, you know, 4 or 5 days, and Pledator muted them already. I mean, boom, like, he sees the same word 4 or 5 days in a row, and he's like, this is a trend. And I'm blocking it. I'm filtering it out. I only want to really have signal. I don't want trends. But I don't know. There's nothing about Vibes that is necessarily against Pledator's, you know, rules or his culture. This just seems to annoy him for some reason. It seems like they're having fun. I think Pledator tries to filter fun and tries to focus on just the pertinent signal.
It just seems like he takes his job extraordinarily seriously, and he doesn't want, he considers fun as a distraction. What do you think the comedy YouTube show would look like if he ever did that? If he doesn't like, if he thinks fun is distracting.
I think his comedy would be pretty, it'd be pretty entertaining. I'd like to, I don't know if everybody would get it, but I think I would appreciate it. I think that the right, you know, good comedy is about scolding people who, you know, just don't punch down, but definitely scold everybody else. And definitely scold everybody else who punches down, and scold people for, you know, just not doing things best practice. And there's so many hypocrites out there who will claim, you know, to care about Bitcoin, and then they'll shitcoin. And when you point out that hypocrisy and you constantly tell people they're hypocrites, there can be some really fight content that comes from that. And I think he's just going to dunk on people who think they're being slick, but I think it's past Pledator.
I've never really understood comedy myself. It's kind of a strange concept. It was interesting hearing Fundamentals explain it on the podcast, though.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's, you know, Pledator's, it's, I would say I agree with them that when, you know, somebody like BitBoy comes on and claims that he thinks Bitcoin's going to change the world, and then he does, you know, an XRP ad, and it's, you know, I do find that funny as well. I think Pledator sees a lot of people that they say they find that funny, and he's like, I could make a video about it.
Interesting. Well, yeah, we're going to have a good time in Vegas. I'm looking forward to it. Been talking about it week after week because I'm so excited. I don't know if we have any new developments this week that I can share publicly. We're working on some stuff that I think will be pretty interesting. Got my, got our Nordinals hats in the mail. I posted that online. I did buy them for PodConf, but I thought they were so good. We're gonna tell the Nordinals people to their face that we're tired of them spamming, sending arbitrary data in the blockchain. I'd rather them use that block space for non-KYC cigarette transactions. I'm not against their right to do it. But Nordinals are, I don't know. It's not my favorite thing in the world, but I just thought that'd be fun to wear the hats around.
Let's get to my favorite thing in the world, which is Found Boosts. Unless you had, do you have anything you wanted to clean up with about Vegas?
Yeah,
I think it should just put in the show notes.
The system. Buy a ticket to Sunrise system. Buy t-shirts on orangelabel.co. Wear Beagle t-shirts to the conference. Show everybody what's up. We got some good
In the show notes for this episode, we are going to share the links of every party, every event we're going to go to, what ours is, and all the stores that you can go to get t-shirts to wear to the conference. It's all going to be there. So that's how you get prepared for Vegas, is look at all those links, every single one of them, and buy something from them if there's anything for sale.
Yep. Noster, Las Vegas. Oh, I need to put the Ordinals event, Spam in Vegas, hosted by Aaron Redwing. But yeah, on to the boost. Late stage HODL 10,000 sats says, oh, this is a long one. Wait, it's got a dot, dot, dot. Okay. Oh, it just ends with the dot, dot, dot. I just don't even know what to think until Dennis Porter gives his breaking opinion or just in news. I will keep my eyes peeled on the timeline for notifications of a DPP. Communists seem like who I want to support over the Nazis, but let's not forget that in World War II, it was the U.S.-led heroic objectives defending liberty who won the war. Just don't know yet if the HODL Alliance is going to team up with the Nazis this time or the communists again, but they can just HFSP. I'm just going to HODL and listen to 40 HPW. Yeah, dude. I'm writing an article. I should have it finished by tonight. I was working on it before this, looking to publish tomorrow around the time that this is coming out, doing some analysis on the communists versus the Nazis. I'm not sure who would represent like the democratic Western allies in World War II in this situation, in the communists versus the Nazis. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't know if it maps that easily to, sometimes that's a problem. Sometimes these things that are happening in a space don't have a precedence that we could easily map it back to, like, all right, the good guys in the good guys were the United States, the bad guys were Iraq, the good guys were the United States, the bad guys were Vietnam, the good guys were Winston Churchill, the bad guys were the Nazis and the fascists, and also the Russians, but only in hindsight. And, you know, stuff like that. So it's sometimes it's hard to like easily map those up because the bad guys aren't always the same people in every conflict. And the good guys, you know, just because you won the block size war doesn't mean you're going to win, you know, the next one. It sometimes you do, sometimes you don't, but you can't just count on it. So that's my non-answer.
Well, to kind of go off the non-answer, I guess it just depends on who wins. There's this
common thing. It's too early to say who's the United States in this conflict because we don't know who has won yet.
So it's whoever Dennis Porter picks. I don't know why he's waiting so long to choose the winner in this battle. Well, thank you for the boost, late stage HODL.
You know, the next one is from our boy, first guy I smoked a non-KYC cigarette with at a Bugle meetup, is Shadrach. He hit us for 9,263 sats. And he just said, I'm still confused, but thanks for trying. And sometimes that is a great, but the only response you can have to a podcast is, I'm still confused, but thanks for trying. And you go on to the next one. But you eventually figure it out.
That's a unusual stance, because I think most Bitcoiners, they don't like to admit that they're confused and that they don't know, because there's a stigma, because, you know, people reading that might think that Shandrak's not listening to his 40 HPW, but, you know, sometimes that's just the honest answer. You don't know. We can't know everything about everything. I guess just like knowing where you're properly credentialed and where you're not, being able to discern those two things.
Yeah, you won't understand. It's a weird, it is an unfamiliar sentiment, but it is a brave one, a courageous one.
Definitely. Next one from FOMO Chronic 5000 Sats says, serious stuff. What is that? Like a ball emoji? Like wiener? Ball and dick?
I think it's a heart. It's usually a heart.
Keep it up.
I mean, yeah.
Well, we'll keep it up. We'll never
Dennis
rest.
Porter, Dennis Porter will assure us of that.
That's not a problem over here. I'll tell you that much.
Have a cigarette. Listen to some Dennis Porter if it is for you. The next one is Odie 40HPW. He's also got it in his profile picture too, the 40HPW watermark. Odie, thank you. Haven't heard from him in a while, but he boosted 2,121 sats. As most Norwegians, I stand with the communists. Odie is standing with his fellow Scandinavians and doing it for the collective, for the communists.
Yeah. Jason C., 2,100 sats. Great show, gents. I continue to enjoy the variety of content and evolution of the overall podcast and team. We're definitely growing over here.
Yeah. Blizza, 1,100 versus 1,010 sats. Credentials matter. Blizza's been listening forever. He gets it. You get to
good friend Bob the Cow, 500 sats. Why can't Bitcoiners get along and sing Kumbaya? Well, I've got a theory on this. It's both a mix of autism and thinking for yourself. Like if you actually form your own opinions on things, you're going to have disagreements with other people. I think the only time that everybody gets along is just because they're just kind of like going along with the same narrative. And it's like, that's what PodConf wants.
It is a form of test, and I don't think a bad one. It's just a test to see somebody's temperament and nature. People who have really thought deeply and thoughtfully about something and considered all sides, they may not say what you want to hear. They may not agree with you. They may debate you. They're not afraid, you know, they're not going to be upset about the opportunity. They're going to be willing to debate, like Preston Pish, you know, he wanted to debate Shinobi. And there was some back and forth going, but when it came down to it, Preston ghosted Shinobi because it wasn't Jamie. He hasn't really thought about his position enough. So he wanted to take that time. But, you know, people, it's not that they're always fighting. It is just that they are testing whether these other people have thought about it as much as they claim they have.
That's a good point. Yeah, I guess PodConf definitely wants the fighting.
Or are you just a paid agent? Or are you just a replicator?
Yeah, there's that. I mean, there's the spooks that come in and try and stir up stupid arguments about nothing, like sats versus bits. Then there's PodConf wants to create drama because they want people to want to watch their live streams of their conferences and buy tickets to see debates at it. Then there's the podcasters who want people listening to their podcasts. There's a lot of different incentives going behind the scenes. And then there's all the people that think for themselves that, you know, have opinions on things that want to interject, and then they get kind of caught up in whatever the argument is. So it's a giant mosh pit. But, I mean, that's how the free market works. Free market for ideas. Bob the Cow, 500 sats, says, oh wait, I just read that.
Yeah, there you go. That one. The next one is, I guess it's your turn. No, it's my turn. Turkey. And that's just a fountain episode. I think it's 500 sats. No comment. Thank you.
Turkey. BTC on board. 300 sats. Laugh, laugh, laugh emoji. Thank you, BTC on board. BTC on board is probably one of our most consistent boosters and listeners at this point.
Yeah, I was going to say. Oops. The next one is from God's Death, 237 sats. Thank you, Fags.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
Larry Oshi Finkamoto. Well, that's an interesting name. It's kind of unusual. Little bit of corny title, don't you think? What was their title? Communist versus the Nazis. Oh, corny spelled C-O-R-E-N-Y. Like, I get it. That was a pun. Very good. Yeah.
Yeah, I missed that one. I thought he was just being pedantic.
That was clever. Good job. Yeah, if you want to throw puns in the booth, I'm all for it. Go for it. That'll keep me entertained for sure. Thanks for the boost.
Yeah, I think the last one's from the Oscar gang. 100 sats. As always, incredible TA.
Well, thank you, Oscar gang. Well, thank you for everybody that boosted this episode. Looking forward to seeing everybody in Vegas that shows up. And those that don't, we'll see you on the Intellectual Silk Road. Keep on learning. Keep on listening to 40 HPW. And we'll catch you on the next week of the Beagle Weekly.
Peace.
Get the script, it's taproot tight. Pushing my file through block space right. You want your men pull squeaky clean, but mine's got memes and art and dreams. You call it spam, I call it signal. Your nodes uptight, mine's more nimble. Bitcoin's law, it don't exclude. It's bytes and blocks, don't misconstrue. You wanna fix, restrict the chain, but that's control, and that's insane. This ain't course beef, this ain't Luke's game. It's open ledger, code remains. Cypherpunk vibes, I'm going hard. I got a JPEG on my shard. Inscribed with care, it cost me fees. Don't like the art, then fork in peace. I'm on that chain. They say we're clowns, go back to eat. But Bitcoin's canvas has no bounds beneath. We on a block space, we pay the fee. And miners nod, we're proof of fee. You want uniform pools and trimmed down tools, but you can't stop by. Even if you call it wasteful stocks, it's immutable now. That punk's been rock. Inscribed forever unlocks the locks of culture, speech, and on-chain shocks. Not just money, it's freedom talks. I'm in the chain. Yeah. I'm inscribing JPEGs while you sleeping. Mempool's full, but I'm just trying to make some history on Bitcoin's time chain. Leave a legacy, no hope return. I'm going full taproot. This is the pursuit of inscriptions, and I know core devs cringing while I'm living it up. Don't hate the bite, don't fear the code. We're on the shoulders of blocks they wrote. This is the pursuit, the pursuit of inscriptions. Is Coinbase, eternal is hash. Even if Luke trying to memory trash, we inscribing, yeah, we here to clash. On sat by sat, we leave our stamp, man. This is the chain, we built it flat, man. This is the pursuit of inscriptions, and I know y'all hating, but I'm lighting it up.